Welcome back to Sweet Pea Podcast, The Early Years, with your host, Loretta McDonough. So, hi, Sandra.
Hello.
And here we are back again in DCU, in St. Patrick's DCU. And we're speaking with Sandra O'Neill, the Assistant Professor for Early Years Lecture. And her speciality is technology and maths. Now, we spoke with Sandra the last time in the first series, and we mostly covered technology and bringing it into the early years and how it relates to that, and how the impact of technology has on the development of children, and how as early years we can use it in different ways. We also kind of talked a little bit about different apps and what is good for practitioners to use with children, and how children can be interactive with these apps and with technology rather than being passive with technology. And Sandra was saying that it's better to be active than passive, and that anything that's making a child passive is not really what we should be looking for within different apps. And technology really is very good, and we should embrace it as part of getting children involved in what they are going to use all the time, and have it in a way that is interactive, beneficial, and it's fun. You know, really fun, and that we're not so afraid of. So today, I think with Sandra today, I think we're going to talk about STEM and the new policy on practice that was brought in 2018. And for myself, I know, and the girls that I work with, and a few of my colleagues, we struggle with it because we're not too sure. So Sandra, if you don't mind, just kind of maybe doing a little bit of background and where it came from and exactly what it is.
Okay, so STEM is science, technology, engineering and maths. Okay. So it's a phrase that's used, I suppose, to refer to those four what we would call normally kind of individual subjects. And often you'll hear STEAM, STEAM, and that's arts, which is added into it, which is kind of meant to symbolise that actually when you're using science, technology, engineering and maths with children, that it should be in a kind of creative way. So it's kind of like what you said earlier on about using technology, that the way you're using it is part of children's play. Mm-hmm. It's one part of your toolkit with children, and you should be using it with the kind of normal pedagogy that you would use, and the normal toys and play and scenarios that you would have both indoors and outdoors.
Okay. And the STEM or STEAM, is it part of, not regulations, but is it part of our curriculum? And it should be.
So at the moment, it's included since 2018, it's included in the Department of Education and Skills Early Years Focused Inspection. So that was updated in 2018. And now there is a requirement, there's a signpost, I suppose. What they look for is that there's evidence that children have opportunities to engage with activities that build early positive dispositions towards science, technology, engineering, the arts and maths. So they're referring to STEAM. And all of this kind of came from a much higher level document, I suppose. Oh, I shouldn't say higher level, but a much broader document that was released by the Department of Education and Skills back in 2016. So we now have a STEM education policy statement, and that covers anything from early childhood all the way up to kind of third level and beyond.
All right.
So the idea was that they were trying to encourage people to just be more aware of STEM. Not that they had to change their practice in any huge way, but just to be more aware of it and to try and support it in any way that they could. So that had a kind of knock-on effect that a lot of the things in early childhood, a lot of the policy around early childhood has already changed or is beginning to change. So that's why you see a change in the Department of Education and Skills Inspection Tool.
Yeah.
You'll start to see an awful lot more reference to STEM in the inspection reports.
Okay.
And also we know that the NCCA are working on tools and resources, I suppose, that will go up on the Ask Your Child to Practice Guide to help people to understand what STEM looks like in early childhood. So from birth to three and from three to six, yeah. Normally how they divide those age groups.
Okay. So then, so when we started in our practice in our school, it's quite daunting. So, because you're saying, oh, science, technology, engineering, oh my goodness, what is this? So could you break down in each part, for early years. So if you know, as a practitioner, as somebody that's listening in, or a student starting off.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because I think there is a little bit of confusion, or maybe not dread, but you know, we're not too sure, you know, that kind of little unsurance, because it kind of came in and then we're hearing about it, you know, rather than, you know, kind of
the opposite way around. Yeah. I suppose it's the language that is associated with it that is off-putting. So when you hear science, you think of like biology, physics, chemistry, absolutely. You know, but you know, like biology is also planting. So it's children being able to grow living things. So they're kind of things that you are doing all the time anyway. Yeah. So when it comes to, I suppose, science, even if we look at the kind of primary school curriculum, so there is actually science in junior and senior infants at primary school. So what they look at are things like living things. So you look at yourself and the body and how that works.
Yeah.
Plants and animals. You look at light, sound, heat. So they're all kind of things that you probably will be talking with children or noticing or discussing. They're not things that they will come up in every day in a classroom every day in an early years classroom.
Yeah.
So when we talk about science, it's not kind of as we would have learnt it in school. Yeah. It's very much the most basic version of science.
Yeah, and more fun and more interesting and more relevant to what the children are.
To children, exactly.
To their age group and things like that.
So if we look at technology then, I know we talked an awful lot about technology the last time, but again, you're talking about technology that's open-ended and that the children can use in their play, as part of their play. So things like, you know, like we spoke about before, microscopes and cameras and overhead projectors.
Yeah.
Using apps, as long as they're apps that you have evaluated, and make sure that they are, again, open-ended and support creativity and support interaction. Technology, I think, probably is one that people are, like the science thing, everyone's doing that anyway.
Okay.
I'm sure I will go into any early childhood classroom and be able to see some aspect or element of science that's going on a daily basis. Technology is a little bit more difficult. People probably need to push themselves a little bit.
Yeah, a bit more confident in it.
Yeah. So if people are afraid, go back and listen to the last podcast and have it, because we did talk about it at length, you know. So technology is probably one where people need a push. Engineering, again, it's all things like, you know, building towers with blocks. You know, if I build a really skinny tower, a really skinny base, the higher I build it, the more likely it is that it's going to fall over. It's going to be unstable. Whereas if I understand that I put two or three blocks at the bottom and make it smaller and narrower as I go up, you very quickly are understanding engineering principles.
Yes.
Do you know? So it's those kind of things. They are happening all the time. It's just to be on the lookout for them.
Yeah.
Or even things like, balance scales, equilibrium, those kind of things that normally we would associate with maths, but actually it's engineering as well.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
The issue when you're talking about STEM for very young children is there's a huge amount of overlap between science, technology, engineering and maths. Because like if we even kind of move on to maths, I suppose, you could also say, well, like I'm using balancing scales to help children to understand when things are equal, when they're the same and when they're different.
Yes.
Do you know? So they're, I suppose in early childhood in particular, all of those things kind of start to merge together. It's just you have to be able to identify them in your practice.
Yeah. And knowing the words.
Yeah.
Like knowing the words to use and being comfortable around those words.
Yeah.
And, you know, if a young child is building the block and, you know, you're watching and then the block keeps falling down and then eventually they figure out, well, if I put four maybe in a square and then add them all up or, you know, whichever way he decides he's going to build his tower, then you are saying, oh, look, I can see that you've made a foundation or you've structured it. So you're using words that they become familiarized to say, well, I've stabilized it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if we get comfortable with the words around that then it makes sense, you know, or not that it makes sense. It links what you're doing to the STEM. You're identifying and using the words. So it's science. I'm doing science today and we're going to look a little bit at technology and we're going to do a bit of maths. And we did maths today. So even going back into their journals, their learning journals, you're naming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a huge amount of research around. There's two things. One is that maths anxiety is a real thing.
Yeah.
And all teachers at all levels suffer with maths anxiety. So there's research about, you know, primary and probably not post-primary, because if you're going into maths and you want to be a maths teacher, you're probably good at maths, you know, at post-primary level. Yeah, yeah. But for primary school teachers, and definitely for early childhood teachers, maths anxiety is a real thing. And there's been lots of research into it. And if you think that you are capable of teaching maths, then your effectiveness as a maths teacher, as you would imagine, is higher. Yeah. So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's called like maths teaching efficacy. So if you think, oh yeah, I'm able to do this, this is easy enough, I was always kind of okay at maths, then you're much more comfortable with it. You're much more likely to kind of support children, to recognize and support children when they are engaged in kind of very fundamental maths concepts. But it is something, it's not something that comes naturally, I suppose. There's a misconception that maths is difficult, or maths is not appropriate for very young children, so therefore it's not our responsibility to support children's understanding of maths. But actually there's a huge amount that we can do, and there's a huge amount of research that shows that children's maths abilities, when they start in formal education, kind of dictate their success in education as they go on. There's a researchers, Duncan et al, I think it was 2011, and they basically found that above children's social and emotional abilities and their literacy and language abilities, the most important thing even above those was their understanding of basic math skills. That was the best predictor of how well children would do in school later on.
Okay, so like it's really important, because when I think of my primary school, I was okay with maths. I think I was okay. But when I went to secondary school, I struggled.
Yeah.
But it was to do with the teacher and maybe the school or something like that. So it does have an effect, you know, on how you're being taught as well. So I think if we're saying that early years is so important, and the children are learning so much, and they're like a sponge, they're taking everything in.
Yeah.
And the supporting adult is very important, that we all have to get comfortable with maths and not be so afraid.
Yeah.
Of the big words.
Yeah.
You know, or...
And all it takes is kind of a little, probably like the technology as well, all it takes is a little bit of sitting down and thinking about it and agreeing with yourself, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Because a lot of there's kind of two parts to maths, I suppose. One is the content areas. So it's things like counting, which you don't really do a huge amount of, you know, shape, space, sets, measure, all of those kind of things on a very basic level with young children. But then there's also the other part, which is around the processes. So the your pedagogy and how you support children to begin to understand maths. Maths is so abstract. Like, we've made up these series of words in order to help us to understand the world. Yeah. And we all know what it is, and we all agree it, and we all understand it. But we kind of forget that children haven't learned those things yet, because they're so abstract. Like, the number line is so completely abstract.
Yeah.
But we just understand it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, on.
That's just the way it goes.
To infinity. But the children have to learn all of those number words. And then they also have to learn the order that they go in. And then it's only kind of after they've done that kind of rote learning of all the words that they can begin to, what they call like a rational counting, like an actual understanding that the number two or the word two actually signifies something.
Yeah.
1, 2 items, you know? So there's quite a lot for children to get their head around and to understand. But I digress. What I was talking about was the fact that there's kind of content areas, and that there's also processes that help children to understand. And part of those processes are the language that we use as adults, the equipment that we provide, and also how comfortable we are with maths and supporting maths, being able to identify, oh, that's that, you know, that's something that child might be interested in, something mathematical going on there, you know, maybe I need to read this book explain this or provide these materials in order to help support that.
And how young, or is there an age, is there no age that children shouldn't be learning maths?
No, so basically what they say now, you know Cher French is my colleague here, and she's the baby guru, but even very, very small infants, they do this thing called subitizing. So basically, if you show them a kind of a small number of items, they can very quickly kind of figure that out without actually counting. So like there's, I can't remember the name of the paper now or the researcher, I'll have to find out what it is and I'll send it on to you. But basically, very small baby, the piece of research was, or the experiment, even though we shouldn't use that word for very small babies, but the experiment was they had a very small baby in a high chair and they rang a bell twice, you know, ding ding,
yeah.
And they had a bowl with two, you know, little pegs in it or something like that, and then another one with three, and invariably the babies looked at the corresponding bowl. So two bells, bing bing, and then they would look at the bowl that had two items in it.
Right,
or a bell,
okay.
Three bells, bing bing bing, and they would look at the one that had three.
Yeah.
So we're kind of hardwired to do it. So really it's a kind of our responsibility to be looking out for those things and to be supporting them and to be helping babies, yeah. In particular. Like one of the very first things that we look at with our students here is, in terms of maths, is sets. So you kind of, do you remember that from school?
The triangles and the half of circles and the arches. Is that the set?
Oh, no, no, no. This is different. No, this is different.
You know, the pencil thing you used to put in and point and make things around. I always loved buying it because I thought it was very special.
Yeah,
bringing it to class.
Yeah. And then did we ever use it?
I don't know. Really.
No, I don't know. the first thing that we normally look at with our students is sets because and this is what I was saying earlier on about science, technology, engineering, maths being very similar. One of the first things that young babies have to do is to be able to notice the difference between things or notice things that are the same. You have to notice the kind of the attributes of things and begin to categorize them. So that's one of the earliest maths abilities that babies develop.
Okay.
So that's why things like the treasure basket is amazing, because children begin to kind of mould things and touch things and, oh, that's cold and it's a bit hard. You know, they don't know that's a steel spoon,
yeah,
and that's a whisk, but they begin to kind of categorize things. Oh, those things taste the same, or they feel the same when I put them in my mouth. They're wood, the same thing. So they begin to kind of get the idea in their heads that not everything is the same.
Yes.
And they kind of begin to, on a very fundamental level, categorize things. And that's equally so, I suppose, why we have kind of moved away from having all plastic toys in a baby room, because you don't learn those abilities if everything you're tasting and touching and feeling is the same. I suppose the more exposure to it, the more likely children are to kind of begin to understand those things. And really, when you're talking about maths for very young children, you are talking about hands-on. For the most part, you're talking about hands-on materials, you know, things they can touch and taste and feel, and even their kind of movement, you know, when you're doing counting, if you're going up steps, you know, one step, two step, three step, four step, those kind of things, because they can feel what those numbers
it's physical.
Feel like. Yeah.
It's physical doing, and it's visual. It's the all, the everything. It's them composing everything together, isn't it?
And it's those little, like only tiny little changes to your practice that do make a huge difference, you know?
Yeah.
So we've all kind of done that, you know, where you count the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And that's a really important skill for children to learn, because they do have to learn the number words, and they do have to learn that they go in a certain order. It's called the stable order principle. So children have to understand that there is a particular order, and that order never changes, no matter what. It stays the same. And even things like, you know, if you're counting people at the table, 1, 2, 3, 4 children, it's cardinality principle. So the fourth child also names the number of people who are in that group, who are in that set. Do you know? So actually just doing those basic things, like I say, the rote number line is kind of important, but being able to go 1, 2, 3, 4 children. Okay, we have 4 children at the table, so therefore we need 4 plates. And then you have to count out 4 plates. 1, 2, 3, 4 plates. And every child gets 1 plate. So 1 plate for you, 1 plate for you, 1 plate for you, 1 plate for you, which is the one-to-one correspondence.
And you're reinforcing it.
Yeah.
So it's that repetition and reinforcing it. So, you know, there is 4 people, we've counted 4 now, there's 4 plates now, there's 4 cups.
Yeah.
So within 5 minutes before they even had their lunch or tea break or anything, they've counted.
What if I rearrange the children? Or what if I counted them in a different way? So I have 1, 2, 3, 4 children. So now what if this does not work for podcasts because people can't see what I'm doing. But if I counted them, you know, if I went to the first child and then I went to the fourth child and then I went to the second child and then I went to the third child. Now how many children are there?
Yeah.
There's still four children, still four people in that group. But just because we've counted them in a different way, the number is still the same.
Yes.
So all of those things are actually, like, we forget how complicated it is for children to learn how to count in a rational way.
It's even conditioning your own brain to go back to basics.
100%. Basically what we're talking about here are things that you're doing on an everyday basis anyway, but it's actually using a maths lens. It's beginning to see the maths in the everyday things that you're already doing. So I know it seems really unfair in some ways that the department have decided, well, now we're inspecting you on STEM, but actually you're doing all this stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, it's just actually trying to notice the maths in your kind of everyday.
Yeah.
You know, like there are so many children's books that would support different maths concepts, but let me think. I'm looking at my shelf over here to see what would be a useful book to talk about. Is there a book that everybody has?
Well, I think the basic number books, and there's a lot of like the caterpillar, you know, the hungry caterpillar.
Yeah, that book is also a really good example of science, do you know, because you're looking at the life cycle of
a caterpillar and a butterfly. Yeah.
So, and there are lots of books out there that have that kind of overlap, you know, that they either have measure concepts or a pattern or, you know, any of those kind of things. We have a really lovely book that we got this year by a lady. She's an author from Kilkenny called Olivia Goodwillie. And she has three books. They're amazing books, especially for anybody who is living in a kind of more rural area, you know, who's not in an urban area. But she has three books, I think, now. We bought all three of them and we use them in our classes here because they're fantastic. One is around kind of growing vegetables. So, you know, from a seed all the way up, and they have to be watered and they have to, you know, you have to give them sun and it takes time and all of those kind of, so again, they're science concepts. And then they also, at the end, there's kind of a recipe for how you would make soup, you know, if you grow your own vegetables, how you'd make soup. So there's huge amounts of things that you could do with that. You know, okay, well, will we make our own, you know, soup?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't, obviously you're probably not going to be able to grow carrots in your back garden in the space of 2 weeks or whatever it is, but let's make a list of what we need in the supermarket. So you make your list and you order them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, how are we going to get to the supermarket? So you have to go on, you have to look at a map, you have to see, you know, how long it's going to take to get there. You have to pay for it, you have to get your change, you have to come back, you have to go through the steps of making that. So there's loads of concepts there in terms of maths, space, shape, measure, counting, all of those
things.
Do you know? So that's a really lovely one. And there's also kind of an element of change. You know, you have hard vegetables and you apply heat and they become mushy soup, you know?
Because you've, yes, exactly. And they have to figure out that and see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they actually like the little child that's feeling, touching, smelling, seeing it. So even the 3-year-olds, 5-year-olds, if they're doing something like that, and it seems like there's a lot of work put into it. But like the last time you said about using technology, you could go online.
Yeah.
And go into one of the supermarkets and maybe as a teacher or a practitioner, maybe have a pre-set up that you're, you know, so it's not too complicated. You're ready to go. You go in and say, well, what do we need to make our soup? Have the list ready and you go in and click ready to go.
Yeah.
And then it's as simple as that. Let's see when he's going to bring
and
it.
And imagine the excitement of that arriving. Like, and you all deciding who's responsible for what. Okay, so you're going to peel the carrots. You're going to peel the potatoes. You're going to pull apart the parsley and we're all going to put them in the, you know, in the bowl and then we're going to go into the chef and the chef's going to, you know.
Yeah, put it in the pot.
Yeah. She also has another lovely book where they make butter from milk, you know. So these are children who live on a farm, so there's no butter thing for their bread. So they go out to the cow and they milk the cow and they, you know, do whatever. So it actually kind of explains where your food comes from as well, which is lovely. Yes. But there's a recipe in it for how you make butter from milk, from cream.
That's really important because there's like lots of children in our country, in Ireland, that's rural and they go to rural schools and like maybe they even live in town or their grandparents still live in the farm and things like that.
Yeah.
And then that they can see that their grandma, they might not be making butter anymore, but they have an interest in how the butter, or even how the butter gets to the table. We take a lot for granted.
Yeah.
All of us, you know, that we just go out to the shops and we buy butter, we get our yogurt, we buy soup in a cup now.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Everything is instant. Like there, a couple of weeks ago, one of the children said to me, did I fancy a coffee? And I said, oh, I do. I'd love an L coffee. And she goes, yeah. And then I goes, well, how are you going to make it? And she says, oh, I'll just buy it in Starbucks.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
And I went, well, That's actually what you do. You just go to Starbucks and you just buy everything. Yeah. So we need to break it down and we need to get, well, I think you need water and beans, and then I gave her the beans and they smelled like coffee. And so it was quite simple. It was a matter of just running into the kitchen and getting, even if it's instant coffee, and saying, smell that.
Yeah.
And we put water into it. That's how we make it, you know. And then all of a sudden we had a little cafe and everybody was making coffee and things like that. But it is as simple as that, isn't it? Yeah.
And then there's loads of opportunities there to, you know, okay, well, we're going to, like, how much is that going to cost?
Yes.
So it's going to cost 2 red counters. So every time I need one of those, I need 2 red counters to buy a coffee. This fancier coffee over here costs 3 counters.
Yes. Yeah.
Why does it cost more? I don't know. Like, you can have those discussions with the children because it's in a bigger cup or it has cream in it or, you know, whatever it is. But there's lots of opportunity to talk about, to reason and to apply logic to that in a mathematical way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's asking those questions, those open-ended questions, isn't it? And letting them think about what their rationale is of what they think it is.
Yeah, you know? And that's part of math. So we tend to think about it as just counting or measure or data or whatever it is. But actually, it's a way of looking at things. It's a way of problem solving. It's a way of justifying. So, like, we do all of those things. You know, if you're building a den out in the garden with the children, you would have a conversation about, okay, well, you know, what do we have? We've got a blanket and we've got this stick over here and we've got some tape and we've got, you know, we can put it over the monkey bars. We could, you know, you are going to have those conversations.
Yeah.
Who's going to be responsible for that? How will we make sure it stays down? You know, it's all of those discussions are kind of maths discussions
are. Yeah, and they're happening all the time. It's just for us to be aware of it and to make the best opportunity of when it does occur. And if it's not happening in your classroom, I think you need to reflect on why it isn't.
Yeah.
You know, and then I think that sometimes we need to use those moments as much as we can.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, like you said, I was inspected there at the start of the year, and on my report was that there was some evidence of STEM. And I was like going, where's the evidence? I was loads of evidence everywhere. But it's using what we have.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and being very reflective and being very honest with ourselves, we realize that we're not making the most of the opportunities. And like you just said, it's the we were thinking too big, way too big.
Yeah. There's the tendency to think, okay, now I have to, like, create volcanoes in my garden.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Which is great, you know? Like, if you have a group of children who are interested in that and you're happy to do it, that's great, you know? But
not when they can't count or they don't have the rationale of what comes next.
No.
We're jumping.
Yeah, you're jumping way too far ahead.
Way too far.
Yeah, you're jumping way too far ahead, you know? There's an awful lot to maths, you know, like, an awful lot of the groundwork has to be done. Like, I am a real believer in using storybooks to help children to understand very basic maths concepts. So, and like I said, trying to use that maths lens. So we have a book here, which is just, probably everybody has seen it, you know, Spot Bakes a Cake.
Oh, yes.
Is what it's called. And we use that as an example. We give it out to our students and we say, okay, how look through this and see what kind of maths language is included in this. And I think if you actually go through it, there's something like 5 or 6 explicit maths words, you know, like, Spot is on a tall chair. He uses the biggest bowl. There's very few actual explicit maths words. But if you look at the pictures, you begin to see that actually there's lots of maths. He's using a really long spoon. He's using the biggest bowl. The mixture is overflowing. So there's all of this maths language in it if you begin to look at things using that kind of maths lens. And again, everyone has the Hungry Caterpillar. Yeah. If you look at that through a maths lens, you begin to see there's a huge amount of maths in it, you know.
Yeah. It's just seeing it.
Yeah.
It's just letting ourselves see it. So, lately, there's been a lot about girls in maths and trying to encourage.
Yes.
I haven't actually researched, I haven't looked into research. Is it the same that girls are not presenting themselves as maths or engineers as much as boys are?
So there's a couple of things about this, maybe. So one is, did I tell you last time about the preschools in Iceland that are girl-only preschools?
No.
So this is one take on it. In Iceland, I think it started in Finland, but in Iceland, definitely, they have girl-only preschools. And basically, the thinking behind this is that boys dominate spaces like the block area. they dominate the monkey bars. They tend to get the fastest trikes and the fastest bikes out in the playground, and they kind of take that space whether people are in their way or not, you know. And they're kind of more boisterous and they're more into it, and that's, you know, so they get more opportunities to understand basic maths and engineering and science skills because they're using the block corner all the time, you know, where there's loads of maths and engineering going on there. And the girls really, when, you know, when they're there, they're kind of there in a support role. They're kind of there to kind of help you, you know, here, take this block, and here, I found this other block, you know. So basically what they did in Iceland was they just said, we're actually going to separate children out for the first couple of years, and we're going to give girls the opportunity to be in those spaces. Because essentially what's happening is the boys are dominating. They have more time, they have more exposure, and therefore the girls basically perceive them as being better at, you know, engineering and maths and those kind of things. So they've made a decision, and they've become really popular, these kind of girl only preschools. Now that's kind of extreme.
And is that through research, or are they doing, they've made a conscious decision to do it?
They've made a conscious decision to do it, but there is research that shows that boys kind of dominate those spaces.
Okay.
There's another piece of research. There's a lady called Marina Burrs in the States who uses, she's kind of created these robots, and they did testing. Again, I shouldn't say testing. They consulted with very young children about, because they were kind of getting more boys playing with them than they were getting girls playing with them. They go into a classroom and they'd introduce them, and what was happening was they were just asking the children whether they wanted to take part, and more boys were doing that than girls. So eventually what they did was they kind of did a test where they laid out particular toys. You know, they had like a Barbie, they had blocks, they had Lego, and they had this robot, this Kibo robot, and they asked the children to say whether they were boy toys or girl toys, or whether they were for both.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can kind of imagine how that went. The Barbie was for girls, the, you know, the balls for boys, whatever. But a lot of the children actually said this robot, because it had like blue on the outside of it, they figured that that was for boys, that it wasn't for, and these were like 3 and 4 year olds, that this wasn't for girls. So they actually ended up changing the robots, and now the outside of it is like an orange colour, because so it's more neutral, a gender neutral colour. So her kind of point is there's very basic things that we can change that will help girls to kind of, you know, start to focus on STEM. My colleague here, Sinead, is working on a piece of research around the kind of language that we use with young children and girls, particularly around STEM. So she's working with primary schools and with parents around the kind of language that they use with children. Because basic change is something as simple as if you say to a little girl, you know, let's do science, they're more likely to engage than if you say, let's be scientists.
Okay.
And the opposite is true of boys.
So they want to be the scientist.
Yeah.
They just don't want to do it.
So boys are more likely to engage if you say to them, let's be scientists. But I suppose it's not as strong when you say to boys, let's do science. Most of the boys will still engage. Whereas if you do it the other way, most of the girls will probably opt out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So you should have a look at, it's Sinead McNally, who's my colleague here, who's working on that. Her research, she's doing it at the moment. She's been out in loads of schools doing this kind of
work. Great to talk to her. It's great to find out about it. Yeah.
So it would, it's a really interesting piece of research. So she's, at the moment, she's doing that. So it'll be written up kind of fairly soon. I'd say it'll be coming out in the autumn or kind of the end of the year. But that's really interesting. So even the language that you use has an impact.
Is there anything else that, as a early years practitioner, that we should be, say, maybe aware of, or that we can get ourselves ready, you know, or kind of embrace the STEM?
So there is, like I said earlier on, there is a STEM policy statement, and then there was an implementation plan that came after that, which was, you know, making changes to things like the early years inspection, all this kind of stuff. So there was an implementation plan that went from 2018 to 2019, which obviously covers till the end of this year, but there will be a new one in 2020.
Okay.
So I would encourage people to kind of keep an eye out for that and see how does that implementation plan affect us. Like I said, it does cover from early childhood all the way up to kind of post-primary and after that as well. But it'd be useful to keep an eye on it, because it actually just kind of lists what all the government departments are going to be doing, and you can kind of gauge from that what's going to be coming down the line. Like, we kind of knew because the changes to the inspection tool were coming, that that's what the inspectors are going to be looking for. Yeah. It's kind of something new that we're not used to them looking for. They, you know, obviously they did look for kind of literacy and numeracy supports before because of the literacy and numeracy strategy, but now this is something that they're looking for too.
Yeah.
So I suppose I would just encourage people to, again, try and use that STEM lens. Look for the science, maybe use a bit of technology, look for the engineering, look for the maths. You know, look for the things that you're already doing, look for the things that the children are already interested in. And start there, you know, try and reinforce those things. Yeah. There will be resources coming out on the Ashley Shields Practice Guide, I think, by the end of the year. Tip sheets around, you know, how you can support STEM for birth to 3 and 3 to 6. And hopefully there'll be kind of national training on it as well.
Okay. Just keep an eye. Yeah. Be very aware of that it is on board and not to be so scared.
And I am currently doing, so I know this last time I was doing a piece of research by technology, but I'm also doing a piece. It's a longer term piece. It's probably going to take me maybe 2 years or more around maths and early years educators' perceptions of maths and how they use maths or how they support maths in their classroom. That's a long-term piece of work that I'm going to be doing. So I am suggesting that I would actually go in and work with people in their classroom.
Great idea.
So if there's anybody out there who is interested in doing that over the space of 6 months or maybe 8 months, it'll probably be kind of a visit a month or something like that. Okay. Do you know?
Yeah.
Let me know.
I will. And we'll put it out there and I'll put it out on my website as well. So when you go in to look at this episode, there'll be, if you just click on to Sandra O'Neill, there will be that information there and we can put it all on there. So if anybody's interested, and I think it's really important that we all get on board these research and these projects because it just, it's just kind of feeds, it gives us information about what is happening and where we can go after this, you know, where we can learn from it and we can develop our sector. Great. So, Sandra, thanks a million.
Thank you again
for giving me time and good luck with the PhD.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, thank you. So there you have it. On to the next time. This is your host, Loretta, telling you to take care and be kind to yourself.